You know, artificial intelligence seems to be, and I think it actually is, pretty much everywhere these days. And we are going to take a look now at how AI is affecting healthcare. Larry Mueller here for WPR News, and our guest is Cheryl Goswami. Cheryl Goswami is UW Health Chief Information and Digital Health Officer, and recently UW Health hosted a roundtable in Washington, D.C., more than 30 leaders in government, healthcare, and tech talked about AI in healthcare. And I want to talk with him about why or what they talked about and how AI is affecting maybe your healthcare. What questions do you have about AI and its use in medical settings? Have you had an experience? Cheryl Goswami, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
Good afternoon, Larry. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having us.
So why did UW Health feel it was important to have this roundtable discussion in D.C.?
Well, I think you said it very well in your opening comment. Everybody needs to know something or has an opinion about artificial intelligence. And as a leading academic medical center in the country and a pioneer in adopting this technology over a year ago with our colleagues at Epic and developing that software, we felt it was imperative upon us to be responsible leaders and work with our legislators and members of our executive branch of the national government to share some of the opportunities, some of the concerns, some of the shared risk and rewards that we in the healthcare provider area can gain working with our partners at the national government. Hence, we took it upon ourselves to build this coalition, if you may, of peers and had this roundtable.
So there were, I think, two discussion sessions, if I'm not. The first one was on the patient care and experience side of AI in healthcare. What problems is AI solving for healthcare systems? And I'll probably also ask you, what are they not solving?
Well, it's problems and opportunities both, right? So as everyone will agree across our country, healthcare staffing shortages are well documented. These shortages are impacting patient care. There is burnout. We are still having issues with staff. A lot of folks, our jobs are not being filled, so on and so forth. And so we look upon this as a form of where we can augment the human labor and try to start doing some work that technology can help do and reduce the burden on our provider and our care teams, which in turn leads to a better patient experience for our patients and their families. So that was the main aspect of the patient care and experience. And in my own words, I will say UW Health approaches this with the scale of how can we make our providers efficient? That's number one. Two, how can we do this with the right ethics? Ethics matter because we're dealing with personal data of our patients and providers. And three, how do we do this with an equity mindset to ensure that there is no further discrimination in any form across our patient base? And finally, the most important piece is technology is never going to replace the human in this ecosystem of providing care. So the empathy for which we all signed up to practice in healthcare should never be compromised just because there is a technology embedded in the process. And that's what we took to the table when we went to Washington, D.C., to say, how can we do all that in improving patient care?
Mm. John in Hayward has a comment that may relate to this. John, hello.
Yes. Hey, Larry. It's John.
Hi, John. What's on your mind?
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry. I am just scared out of my wits that this AI is going to take over everything. You know, it just feels like robots taking over the world. You know, kind of, and I'm very scared of it.
You know, I bet you're not alone, John. I bet you, Cheryl, this is something you've heard.
100%, John, and I could have very well expected this question, and we should be scared to a certain extent, which is why leadership comes with responsibility, and I can speak from our perspective. Just because technology can do some things doesn't mean technology should do it. There is a right place and a right time for technology to be incorporated. in all the things that we have done to this day and for all our plans going forward, I use the line, the human in the middle will continue to stay. And so by having the human being, it is driving the responsibility of the technology and is also assuring our patients and providers that we are just not having a bot talk directly to the patient or take care of that. So that's what our position is. That's where I would say most responsible health systems across the country, most responsible vendors in the health system are taking place. Beyond that, there is always a possibility that, you know, people are going to abuse technology, which actually, to Larry's point, was the second part of the discussion as to where does regulation and the role of government come in sort of giving us some guidelines, some frameworks, and holding people accountable and responsible for their actions. Yeah. I hope that answers your question.
So, you know, typically when I think about AI, I think about, and I've had at least one online, I think it was a Zoom meeting with my own physician, somebody I've worked with and known for a long, long, you know, practically my whole professional life. So it worked out fine for me. But I'm wondering, not there, so there's that aspect of talking with your physician or nurse or whatever online. In what other ways is AI being used in the arena of patient and healthcare?
Thanks, Larry, for that question. I think it'll be worthwhile to go back and look in a brief retrospective on the journey of AI. So AI has been around for a long time. I would say easily over 30 years. Artificial intelligence in many ways has been used in the healthcare arena and many other domains for a long time. Back in the day, where artificial intelligence could look at your data and predict that you may be at a certain risk to a certain kind of a disease or so on and so forth, and from the providers to take better care of you. AI has been around in our own personal lives for a long time. Self-driving cars have been around for a while. You've had, whether you're using an Apple phone with Siri or Google with Alexa or stuff like that, that's all some forms of artificial intelligence, which have been around for decades, if not years. Where we are talking in the last 15 to 20 months is where it has suddenly become to an expanded scale, where it is starting to use in conversational AI, in sort of what we call deterministic AI, and almost near real time, where you can now go to ChatGPT, ask a question, and it can tell you everything that you would like to know about it, which has made it very easy to do the right thing and very easy to do the wrong thing. I think that context of AI over the last 30 to 40 years is important, setting the context over here. From our perspective, the way I look at it, this is the first time we are going past data and numbers, and we're getting into emotions where we are talking about people's health. We are talking about, you know, people's outcomes, which is very different, and which is where John's question is very appropriate. It makes things risky. And it's become affordable. Until very recently, you and I could not go out and buy a server or a system that could do all these AI things. So suddenly it has become sort of mainstream. AI has broken all records over the history of technology in its adoption to the first million mark, which I think happened in 5 days. It would take years, years for Facebook or the internet to take over. So those are the things that we have to set in context, that the ease of availability, the affordability, that makes this a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it's there are some concerns. There, I actually, you know, I was thinking about the doctor's appointment. When I go to see the doctor, I've got to drive to see the doctor. I've got to park. I may have to, even though the appointment is for 10 in the morning, or 9 in the morning, I may have to, that may not happen right on at the appointed time. And you're suddenly looking at a fair amount of time involved for maybe a 20 or 30 minute visit.
You're right on. And COVID has exposed that possibility even further. And so at a broader scale beyond Madison, if you start thinking of rural healthcare, this is where technology can be a part of the solution to the bigger problem of accessing providers and health systems in a timely manner. I'm not saying it fits everybody's needs, and we live in an environment where a great deal of individuals still want to sit across the table from their provider and care team and talk to them. But for others, like a wellness visit or something more or less acute, a video visit could work just as well. And so, used appropriately, technology should augment all of those, never replace any of those in that care setting. Time is a precious commodity. So if you're driving an hour, parking for 30 minutes, running late for 45 minutes, and all of that, and you can do with a 20-minute appointment, absolutely, we can do that.
I'm wondering, to what extent is AI used among doctors?
So again,
you've got somebody, I don't know, where in some part of northern Wisconsin or some part of Wisconsin, and, I'm not sure about this, or maybe I want to talk with some other physician about the same thing.
Yeah, so this is like many other things. One size doesn't fit all. And so for many years, AI has been used more on the background or the back end of systems, where what we call decision support systems, where we look at your data and we prompt certain things, and the doctors can or cannot ask certain questions to get further information for your prognosis and diagnosis. That has been around for a while. Today, what it really helps is allowing us to help those physicians in northern Wisconsin that you talked about have the expertise and exposure to academic medical center settings, sitting in Madison or Rockford, that can help the provider, 100 miles, 200 miles away, without having to transport the patient from that setting onto our health system in Madison, which in itself poses a risk to the patient. We tend not to force providers to use these tools. We do proof of concepts, because this is not just about the technology, it is the adoption of the technology. And just like a smartphone 20 years ago or an electric vehicle 10 years ago, not everybody moves at the same pace to accept all new things. Change management adoption is very key.
Chiro Goswami, our guest today, UW's Health Chief Information and Digital Health Officer, as we talk AI and healthcare. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Just wanted to mention, if you missed part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archive at WPR.org/Larry to hear recordings of all of our broadcasts going back a long, long way. Let's take another call. Ralph in Green Bay, it's your turn. Ralph, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just tuned in and I heard your guest talk to the point of an earlier caller being concerned about artificial intelligence taking over. I believe the comment was, but people are in between the artificial intelligence and what it can do and the results. My comment or concern would be, who's that person or people in between the artificial intelligence and what could they do with it? And what came to mind is the Hitler era, the Nazis. What if they had the artificial intelligence and they're the people in between society and what harm artificial intelligence could do? It's like, I suppose, a nuclear bomb or anything else. As we've seen today, rapid firing weapons, what they can do, and the weapons alone aren't the problem. It's the people. And how do you, when you have something as powerful as what artificial intelligence can and will be someday,
yeah, how do you, if there's that kind of a bad person, let's say, in the middle, I think that's a good point to discuss, Cheryl.
Very, very good point. You can't have the fox guarding the coop, as the line goes. So in order to protect that very conflict of interest here, Larry, what we have done is in all our cases today, the human in the middle is a member of the care team, a clinician or a provider or a nurse. I want to be very clear about that. And allow me to get into a detail on the very scenario that we are playing out. And we're doing this at a very slow pace, because this is not a race. getting it right is important than being fast. So an example that we use is when a patient sends a message for certain kind of messages, and these are very low on the acuity or in the terms of criticality, the system generates a response. Every one of those responses is then reviewed by a member of the care team, not by a technology member, not by a member of the vendor, not by somebody sitting outside the shores of the United States of America. It is a UW health professional that reviews the message. And the individual then has a couple of choices. The person has a choice to accept the message, saying, this is exactly the way to answer the question. Yes, you should be able to do that, patient so-and-so, depending on the question. The provider may say, it gets the gist of what my answer is, but Larry Miller speaks a certain way. I am going to put a couple of my own words, a couple of my own sentences, so as to put my signature on it and add all of that. Or may come back and say, I don't like the answer this has been created, and deletes the whole thing. And as a human being would do, create it from scratch and put the response back and send it, which is why we have this thing called ethics that I touched on at the start of the show. By having a member of the provider team taking care of those messages, being a member who's responsible for the care of the patient, we are reducing the abuse that potentially the technology could provide. I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does indeed. I want to keep on that line, but I do want to make sure we discuss for at least a bit about the role of a little more about the role of government, as you discussed, in terms of regulating AI in healthcare, as you discussed at your meetings in Washington, D.C.
So on the role of the government, as we talked about, it has the potential, the AI has the potential to address some of our concerns with access. Larry, you're using your example. However, to our second caller's point, as we drive this innovation, we all know that the government also has to give us certain guidelines, frameworks, and I'll use the word protection, you know, from certain vendors and certain products. Using the very example of Hitler and Nazi, what happens if certain private companies go out and create all of this, and many of them can do it outside the shores of North America, and all of that gets embedded into the use in our environment without the protection, and not everybody may take the higher road that UW Health does in having that human in the middle to create that extra safety check, to have that high bar of ethics and empathy, and everything now becomes about talking to somebody else. Where does that go in terms of defining concepts and managing, you know, the bias and the accuracy that this technology can wreak havoc with? So that was a part of the conversation that we wanted our federal regulators to be aware that we need their support in the innovation, sustainment, and protection while we do this from our side.
Yeah. I wondered how the whole meeting went. Was there how did the conversation go on? Were there consensus on any of this, or?
So if you were to ask me what was the desired outcome of this conversation, and we were there for about 4 hours, and a couple of us met with individual members and staffers of the House of Congress, the primary purpose was to generate awareness. The primary purpose was to burst some myths, because everybody today has an opinion about AI, as you started the show with. And this was our way of saying this is not one health system, but leading healthcare systems, along with responsible partners like Epic, that are coming and saying, this is what it looks like from our lens. And while you make certain decisions, you need to just keep in mind that the patients in northern Wisconsin or southern Wisconsin are very different than the patients of northern California or southern California. So where does that national versus local governance play? And so with all of this awareness, the hope is we will publish some of our findings, some of the conversations. And this is a journey, and it was important to get the step to say, here's what we would like you to consider from our perspective.
Yeah. So you took away from this, you were happy about the results of that discussion.
I would say so, based on the feedback we received from almost 100% of the participants, that this was the first of many conversations that they have seen in this kind, because otherwise it's a very slanted approach where you have somebody selling technology, or somebody asking for a price protection, or somebody asking for, you know, carte blanche approval for something. So this was not lobby politics. This was presenting healthcare in its simplest form.
How did you land in the healthcare? I mean, you're obviously somebody who is very skilled and knowledgeable in this whole area, and been doing it a long time. How did you land in healthcare?
Are you asking about me specifically?
Yeah.
Purely by accident. I did not grow up in healthcare. I worked in other industries, had a couple of, let's just say, less than fortunate incidents with close family members. And so about 18 years ago, when an option came up as to serve in healthcare, I thought I could go and, make a difference. And I will say 18 years later, it is the art of possible, where I can use technology to make a difference in making healthcare more affordable for the next generation. I got two boys. That's what keeps me in healthcare.
That's great. What are some ways that, or no, let me put it this way. What are patients likely to see now going down the road? What are some things that we might expect to see in the next few years in terms of AI and health?
So I would say, if we have a crystal ball, knowing that every 6 weeks, it feels like the outlook keeps changing. I think that in the next 12 to 18 months, the first set of benefits will be indirect to the patient, as healthcare providers use this technology primarily to reduce the burden on administrative tasks. I stress on the word indirect, because it is appropriate that we use the technology for less critical things, get those right first before we expose the risk to something directly in the care of the patient. So the indirect benefits may come in terms of, you know, quicker appointments, lesser errors in their bills, their prescription refills coming in faster, so on and so forth. There is technology that is being piloted or tested right now that also starts dealing with on the prevention side of the house. So how can I look at Larry Miller's, I hope you're okay with me using you as an example,
sure,
data, and say, Larry, based on all the data we have and the technology that we have at our disposal, you may be at risk for a certain type of a cardiac issue 3 years from now. So those are also the things in terms of prevention that can also help, in avoiding a visit to a hospital, which is difficult to start with, as you said. So this is a journey. It is about reducing the cost of healthcare today, which is significant. It is also about reducing the burden on the care provider, who are getting burnt out. And if you don't have a physician today, it means a longer wait time for your patients, which means the patients also gain from that use of the technology. And most of all, it also actually does drive the safety and quality of care, which we often tend to forget in these conversations.
Some doctors I've talked with off, not on the air, have said, have complained about the amount of time they have to spend on essentially it's paperwork, but it's not necessarily, it's in a computer, but it's called paperwork.
Imagine the irony of that. And you're spot on. I have had a resident back in the day tell me that I went to med school and I've become the fastest typist in my family. and it's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in. That all of this information needs to be typed in. Now, beyond AI, we are also talking about other technologies where how can we return the doctor back to the patient? How can we get the doctor to watch the patient in the eye versus looking at the keyboard? So there are other technologies that we are bringing to the forefront that actually captures the conversation between Larry and Chero, if you may, translates it into something that goes on the record, that again, the doctor, back to that second question earlier, the doctor that can then edit and make it accurate. So all of those things, in my way of saying, is it returns the care team back to the care of the patient, and not all computer data entry operators.
Chero Goswami, thank you so much for being with us today. I hope we can do this again down the road. I appreciate it very much. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to our folks that work here. Jeff Robbins, technical director, Lee Rayburn, another technical director, of course, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, our producers, and Jill Nadeau, our executive producer. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store.